Imperial War Museum's Voices of the First World War.
Episode 3, Joining Up.
Suddenly everybody's sons and brothers and husbands were soldiers. And a song seemed to rise, Tipperary, which they all sang and whistled as they marched.
When war broke out in August 1914, Britain's regular army numbered only 250,000. A recruitment campaign was immediately launched to swell the ranks. Irving Jones, from near Caerphilly in South Wales, clearly remembered the effect such propaganda had on him.
The only thing I can remember so well about it is Kitchener's picture, or big, large pictures put all around every hall or every outside each hall. And it was pointing to, we want you. And he was always pointing at me. Whenever I, of course, that's the idea, the artist had that in view. Whoever looked at that picture would think that it was pointing at, and I always used to think he's pointing at me. We want you. And it was in my mind all the time. You know, when I was only a kid, but I was an adult, I think, in my thinking at that time.
It wasn't just posters that had an effect on the young men of Britain. The new medium of film was also used to encourage them to do their patriotic duty, as William Dove recalled.
War had been declared, and the following Sunday I went with a friend of mine into Shepherd's Bush Empire to see the picture show there, and at the end of the show they showed the fleet sailing the high seas and played Britain's Never Shall Be Slaves and Hearts of Oak. And you know, one feels that little shiver run up their back and you know you've got to do something. I was just turned 17 at the time, and on the Monday I went up to Whitehall, Old Scotland Yard, and enlisted in the 16th Lancers.
Pressure to join up didn't always result in young men enlisting. William Berry, 18 at the time, was prevented by his parents from signing up.
There were a lot of posters up with Kitchener, with a finger pointing, Kitchener wants you. There was all the recruiting meetings in Trafalgar Square. There were also recruiting sergeants who stopped you in the street. And I was quite frequently stopped. Oh, young fellow like you, why aren't you in the army sort of business? That was the general line, which was quite true. And I resented it very much because I really wanted to volunteer. And I wanted to go, but my parents weren't very amenable.
Another tactic for persuading potential soldiers to enlist was to give them a white feather, marking them out as a coward. For Norman DeMuth, who was only 16, it was particularly unfair.
I was given a white feather when I was 16, just after I'd left school. I was looking in a shop window and I suddenly felt somebody press something into my hand, and I found it was a woman giving me a white feather. The moment I was so astonished I didn't know what to do about it. But I had been trying to persuade the doctors and recruiting offices that I was 19 and not 16. And I thought, well, you must give me some added bounce because I must look the part. And so I really went round to recruiting offices with renewed zeal.
The effects of the recruiting drive were soon felt. Londoner Olive Finch describes what she witnessed.
War broke out. One night it was declared, and it seemed as though the world had come to an end. And suddenly everybody's sons and brothers and husbands were soldiers. And suddenly there were crowds of men rushing to enlist, and hordes of men tramping along the streets in platoons and on top of the trams. And a song seemed to rise, Tipperary, which they all sang and whistled as they marched.
There were similar scenes in Germany, as Gustav Lachmann recollects.
When the great earthquake came in 1914, that is when the great war broke out, a tremendous surge of national emotion swept the countries of Europe. And on that wave, I was also carried, and I joined a Hessian cavalry regiment as a volunteer, the 24th Hessian Life Dragoons.
The reasons behind each man's enlistment varied. For some, such as Helen Wedgwood's father, Liberal MP Josiah Wedgwood, it was a sense of duty.
First of all, he opposed the war in his first speech. And then father wrote that he was enlisting at once. He went to Churchill and got Churchill to put him into the armoured cars, which was the Royal Naval Division. He was not only over age, but he was an MP. So he had there was no call on him to go. But he said afterwards, well, the whole of the war, he said, they ought to start by taking the over 40s. They've had their life.
For others, like S.G. Little, it was a mixture of peer pressure and a bit of Dutch courage.
Well, I joined up on the 8th of August 1914 after a night out with the boys, and we all decided to enlist the next day. Kitchener's appeal was on the 7th. In the morning they retracted, but I went on, and I came up to London and enlisted in Scotland Yard on the 8th of August. Got there about 10. There was a queue right up to Whitehall one side and Northumberland Avenue the other. I queued up, not feeling too good. I think I fell out and had a scotch during the day. I got in front of the doctors about 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and about 4 or 5 of us were sworn in together.
Although there was a minimum age of 19 for fighting with the army overseas, this was not always enforced. Bill Haynes' friend had already joined the Honourable Artillery Company and managed to get him past the queue and straight to the recruiting officer.
So I went right up to the front and into the gates, where I was met by a sergeant major at a desk, and my friend, he introduced me to the sergeant, and the sergeant said, "Are you willing to join?" I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "How old are you?" I said, "I'm 18 and 1 month." He said, "You mean 19 and 1 month?" So I thought a moment. I said, "Yes, sir." He said, "Right, I will sign here, please."
In the case of Reynard Taylor's brother, enlistment did not mean a guaranteed place in the army.
I had a brother did it very early on. The problem that we had a tower house when he did it, he joined up in August. Now in Ashton-under-Lyme, where it was a garrison town, and the soldiers were principally noted for drunkenness and brawling at Saturday night. And my mother was born in Ashton-under-Lyme, and she was brought up with a feeling of revulsion against soldiers. When one of her lads comes home and said he joined, I thought, my mother broke her heart. Ooh, dear, dear, dear. And my dad talked him out of it, said, "Don't go back."
Eagerness to enlist sometimes resulted in men joining the wrong regiment. Tommy Keel had been a jockey and was keen to join a horse regiment.
I hadn't been in Whitehall 5 minutes before I was grabbed on by a recruiting sergeant. And he said, "Hello, sonny," he said, "you going to join the army?" I said, "Well, I've come down to have a look at it. Yes, I might join the army. What do you want to join?" "Light infantry." "Right, this way, sonny Jim. Sign here." I said, "This is a horse regiment, isn't it?" "Oh, no. It's light infantry with march about 120 to the second. No, this is a marching regiment." "No," I said, "not me. I've never done any marching. I've been a jockey." So I left him. I wouldn't sign the paper, and I went out. But I was grabbed very quickly by another recruiting sergeant. And again, "What are you going to do, son? Are you going to join the army?" I said, "Well, I nearly joined just now, but I found out it was a foot regiment, and I didn't want that." I said, "I have been a jockey and a trick rider and a show jumper and whatnot, and I know all about horses, including doctoring of horses. So that's what I want to join." "Ah, yeah, horses," he said. "Yes, the Middlesex Regiment." I said, "Horses?" "He said, lovely horses. Do you know, for the first year in the Flaming Army, I don't think I ever saw a horse. It was a foot regiment again. I was hooked into that, and I would have loved for many years afterwards to have met that recruiting sergeant again who said, lovely horses."
Thank you.
I'm Nigel Steele, historian at the Imperial War Museum. To mark the centenary of the outbreak of the First World War in 2014, we will be bringing you a series of podcasts that reveal the impact the war had on everyone who lived through it. Each episode will feature the authentic and diverse voices of those who were there. To find out more about First World War centenary events, commemorations and more, go to 1914.org. Listen out for Podcast 4, Wrong Place, Wrong Time.